This is a tape for Dr. Whiting at Rensch Memorial Hospital on June the 15th, 1976. Dr. Whiting, we'd like you to tell us the history of Hazleton and the hospital, as you so well told us before.
Well, when I spoke to you before, I started way back, didn't
I? That's good.
You
said that Hazleton was probably here 1,000 years.
Yes, Hazleton is a very old community, and much older than some other communities around here, much older than Smithers and Prince Rupert, which are just railroad towns.
You mentioned then at that time that Hazleton and all the other villages were, well, of course Hazleton wasn't called that, it was called by its Indian name, I guess.
I suppose so, yes. But there it was at the forks of the Skeena, where the fishing was good and people lived there for many, many generations, I expect.
Yes, and as you say, there was no Prince Rupert and no Smithers and no Prince George.
Railroad, no roads, just trails, I guess.
And then, of course, there was a Port Essington.
Port Essington, I believe, was one of the old Indian villages, and it became the port for the river boats that came from Port Essington up as far as Hazleton, around the turn of the century, these river boats were running.
And then, of course, in the east, the nearest so-called place was Fort George, apparently.
Yes, or Port St. James was another Hudson Bay trading post from way back.
And the whole country was just, as you say, trails, and then the mode of transportation was kind of interesting. You know, you mentioned that they were horses.
Yes, they had horses and they had dogs and dog sleds in the winter and used dogs as pack animals and all year round.
And you had mentioned, because the children really remember this, that a good pack dog, could carry 40 pounds.
Yes, this is a figure that I've heard, yes.
And of course the horses, naturally. So then you mentioned about the white people, and they arrived between 1850 and 1860.
Yes, traders first, and later other people.
And you also mentioned the problems they brought with them, you know.
Oh yes, the white man brought lots of problems for the Indian people. Diseases that the Indian people had never come in contact with before, and smallpox was an especially bad thing, but other diseases too. Tuberculosis was brought by the white man, and measles, which was a very deadly thing.
It often wiped out all villages, just about.
The smallpox would almost wipe out an entire village when it hit.
That must be terrible. And then you mentioned that with the coming of the white people, that's when the steamers.
Yes, and then the steamers started, and the steamers ran until the railroad.
And that Hazleton was the head of navigation.
Yes.
So that's, I suppose, the name Hazleton was then that was the beginning, you might say, of the word Hazleton.
Actually, I don't know when they got the name Hazleton, but quite possibly it's a white man's name for sure, not an Indian.
I understand that it stands for Hazelnut Town.
I understand that too, and there are a tremendous number of wild hazel bushes grow around here.
We were quite proud of the fact that our town is really named after its habitat. You know?
Yes.
So anyway, you mentioned that it was fur trading, and then you also mentioned about the gold, and the supplies.
Well, they had this gold discovery in Manson Creek, and there was quite a gold rush in the late 1800s into Manson Creek. Oh, it was dwarfed by the later gold rush to the Yukon, but there was quite a move of miners into Manson Creek, and they, one of the, perhaps the most important takeoff point for the Manson Creek gold fields was Hazelton, where the trail led overland to Babine and to Tatla Lake and on to Manson Creek.
That's really something. And then, and I guess they, as you say, they had dance halls and, I suppose, bars and all that.
Oh, yes, they'd have the bars, all right. Another one of the blessings that the white man brought to the Indian people.
Well, it must have been a fair population then at Manson Creek, you know.
Oh, I guess so. I guess so, at the height of this, but I don't think it lasted.
No.
Like most gold rushes.
And then you mentioned... Oh, the one about the pack horses in the wintertime. That was interesting.
Yeah, I talked with a man once who used to run a pack train in to Fort Babine, and he spoke of the pass between Hazelton and Fort Babine, where the snow would come early in the fall and lie late in the spring, and they used to have snowshoes tied on the horses' feet, not ordinary snowshoes, but sacks filled with hay that they're bulky, that would give bulk to the horses' feet so they wouldn't sink so deeply into the snow.
That's just fantastic, isn't it? And you mentioned that also these pack horses carried everything, you know, that was a freight line, I guess.
Yes. It was the only way of getting freight in was by pack horse. And so they took the mining machinery in and disassembled on horses. And there are stories of them taking pianos in, probably partly disassembled, on the horses.
I guess they'd have to disassemble them somehow. It's hard to put a piano on a horse.
Not quite.
That's just fantastic. And then, of course, then you mentioned 1899 as a big date for Hazelton.
Well, that was the day, that was the year when Dr. Rich first arrived here, a pioneer medical missionary under the Methodist Church.
Oh, yeah.
Came and started the medical work here, the only doctor in the country.
You mentioned the only doctor to practice with Tini here in Kamloops.
I believe that's correct, yeah.
Oh, that must be. That really, you might say, put Hazelton on the map a long time ago.
Yes.
So you mentioned he came by steamer, and I suppose he... Well, where did Dr. Rich come from?
He came from Belleville, Ontario.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, by rail and by the coast, I suppose, and then by steamer
up the coast, and then I think we've heard that he didn't come up the river by steamer, but came up in a Indian dugout canoe.
Oh, for goodness sake.
For some, I don't know why he didn't come up by steamer, but maybe it was maybe the steamers weren't running just yet that year or something.
Maybe the water was too low.
Maybe something like that.
Because I understand the steamers ran only in very high water.
Well, their season would, of necessity, be short. They couldn't run in the winter when the river's frozen. They couldn't run if there were too many logs drifting down in high water, and so on.
Couldn't run if the water was too low.
Couldn't run if the water was too low.
My goodness. I was going to ask you, was Dr. Tomlinson in the area at that time, or he came later, or did you know?
Well, I think he might have been in the area earlier than that. I'm not sure of my facts on Dr. Tomlinson. I just can't speak authoritatively about
that. But you did mention that, that's okay. You did mention that Dr. Rich and Dr. Tomlinson, they did work together, at least knew each other.
Knew each other, and were contemporaries in the work area.
Oh, that's fantastic. So then you mentioned 1901 was another big date for Hazelton.
What was that?
That was the first hospital.
Oh, I'm not sure of the date of the first hospital. It would be in the first...
You mentioned sort of 2 or 3 years after he arrived.
Yes, well, that might be. I'm not sure when the first hospital was built.
And Annette went on to, of course, the next big project in the Hazleton area, of course, was the building of the CNR railroad.
Yes, the railroad was completed, I think, in first through trains in 1913.
That's to Hazleton only?
Or did no, that was Prince Rupert through to Prince Rupert.
From where? From
Montreal.
Oh my goodness, that really was something.
Yes.
And then, of course, that's South Hazleton, of course. It's South Hazleton.
There's an interesting date on the river, on the Skeena Crossing Bridge over the river. The date 1911 is stamped in the cement. Abutment there, as you can see as you drive.
I have to get a picture of that. And you mentioned it was especially an important date for you, too.
Well, that happens to be the year I was born. Maybe that's why I remember it. Not that I remember it.
No. So then, of course, Dr. Rich, I suppose, had many, many services here to do with the railroad, no doubt.
Oh, yes. 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 Bring in a lot of medical work to him. People were, patients were brought to him by the railroad. As soon as the railroad was operated, the river boat traffic ceased.
Oh, yes, of course, because the railroad went year-round.
Yes.
So that was just really something. And then you went on to say that in 1931, the new hospital was built.
Yeah, but this hospital that we're in now was built in 1931. Dr. Rich planned it and built it. And so 1931 was... 45 years ago.
Mm. And you mentioned it was kind of an L-shape, sort of surrounded the old hospital.
That's right. It was built around two sides of the old hospital, and when the new hospital was finished, the old hospital was demolished.
So that little part, sort of like a little hollow there, and you can't approach it, that must be part of the old hospital.
Yes.
Because I was looking at it, I was taking pictures in there.
They left the basement of the old hospital and the ground floor and put a roof over it, and they used the ground floor as a drying shed for years and years
for
drying the linen. And the basement was used as a fruit cellar for years after the new hospital was in operation.
Oh, for goodness sake. But of course you have those arrangements with the new hospital now, or at least in this hospital.
Oh, yes, we now have electrical dryers for the laundry and so on.
I suppose the basement was useful, as you say, or the drying facilities where you operated that until the electricity came in, practically, I suppose.
Yes.
So one would go with the other.
Mm-hmm. When I was here first in 1939, they had electricity, but they generated it in their own private plant. And it was only a very limited amount of power they had. It was just a lighting plant, and they couldn't use it for many other purposes.
No, certainly not for dryers.
No.
You mentioned that one interesting, that there was a nurse graduate from Hazleton. I thought that was very...
Yeah, she is still here, living here in New Hazleton, and she's on our staff. Still, and she's Frances Willen. She was one of the graduates of Dr. Rich's training school for nurses here.
And you mentioned that for the last 3 months that she would have to go out.
Well, she would have her affiliation time in other hospitals, probably most likely, I believe, in Vancouver, as part of her training.
And of course, there must have been other nurses too that graduated.
Oh, I guess so. The only one I know is Frances Willem.
That's really terrific. And then you also mentioned that Dr. Eric Austin was the next doctor that Dr. Rich was here for some time.
Yes, Dr. Rich retired in 1935, and they had some short-term doctors. There was Dr. Leonard Rich was in charge of the hospital for a short while after his father left. Then Dr. Eric Austin came in 1938.
Well, Dr. Rich is gone then, isn't he?
Yes.
Oh, I see. And also, I know what I was asking was that Dr. Rich was really quite an unusual person. You know, that he wasn't only a doctor, but he was also a member of Parliament.
Oh, yes. He was a member of Parliament. He was for some years, he was the MLA from this part of the world in Victoria. And he was a liberal. And it was quite an active MLA, I believe, and did a good committee work and so on, served the government well.
He must have done a lot of things for Hazelton, of course, through his being a member of Parliament, too.
Yes. There's somewhere around an old picture, photograph, of him officiating at the opening in somewhere in the 1930s of the Hegelgate Bridge.
Oh, that's when the Hegelgate Bridge was opened.
Yes.
1939.
No, well, 1930s. 1930s. I don't know what year. And Dr. Rich was officiating there.
Well, we'll have to find that one. And then, oh yes, I know, then there was a Dr. Large.
Oh, Dr. Geddes Large is still in active medical practice in Prince Rupert, but he's getting on in years now. He was, when he was a young man here, he was here for a time with Dr. Rich.
And then, of course, later on, wrote books.
Oh, yes, he's written this book, The Skeena River of Destiny. He is very well informed and has made quite a study of the history of this whole area.
Yes. Well, he, of course, he's still alive, is he not?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
He's not in Prince Rupert.
Yes,
he's in Prince Rupert.
Still practicing medicine on a slower pace than he used to.
So then, and then, of course, you mentioned that in 1941, when the bridge washed out, I guess that's when they knew Hazelton Morna. Or at least, you mentioned that for a while there were two stations.
Oh, yes. There was New Hazelton and South Hazelton, stations on the railroad. And the way to get to the railroad from Old Town was to cross the low-level bridge down at Old Town, crosses the Bulkley River over to Mission Point Flats there, and then up the hill to South Town. And that was Hazelton's station, nearest point on the railroad. Well, somewhere in the early 1940s, this bridge was washed out with a flood time and was never rebuilt.
Was it in the 40s or was it 1936 when we had the great big flood that ran through?
Oh, it was in the 40s, because when we were here in 39 and 40, we drove across that bridge many times.
And they call that the low level. Well, let's
have a look at... I don't know whether they call it that. It was low level compared to the present Hegelgate Bridge.
But the Hegelgate Bridge wasn't built at that time.
Oh, yes.
It was?
Oh, yes.
So there were two bridges then?
It was in the 30s, we said, that we had this picture of Dr. Rich.
Oh, so there were, for a while, Hazelton had two bridges.
That's right.
Well, I didn't know that. I used to think that was, when that washed out, that was...
No, they coexisted maybe for, I don't know, for several years, the two bridges.
So when you arrived, and that was the next big topic was you arriving, I think... it was interesting how you heard about Hazelton and what made you think about coming here and so forth.
Oh, well, I was I was interested in it because it was a mission hospital, a church hospital, and I came up to Hazleton in 1939. My wife and I were married that same year, and we've been with these church mission hospitals my whole medical career.
You mentioned that, but you, of course, your home was in Toronto, and then your trip was rather interesting by car.
Yes, that was in late December and early January 1939. I drove from Toronto out to Hazleton and arrived here. I think it was January the 9th, 1939, that first saw Hazleton Hospital.
You were very brave to drive this country in January.
I don't know. I had no real trouble at all. The roads, there were no paved roads, no blacktop from somewhere around Ashcroft north. All this gravel road, but in the winter time it was snow covered and didn't matter.
That's right, it was paved.
Yeah, it was paved with snow. Yes, and I got on just fine, except I remember the day that I was driving from Vanderhoof to Houston, it was snowing heavily, and I got to Houston and put up in the hotel there that night, and the next morning the roads were all clogged with snow, no traffic moving, and I lay over for a day in Houston. Then the snowplow came through
and
came on to Hazleton.
And the snowplows were a little different, I guess, in those days too. I suppose they were...
The machinery was different,
But they plowed them just the same.
Yeah.
That's amazing. That's beautiful. And you mentioned that by the time you arrived, Al Benson, of course, was doing great business as
a taxi driver. He was the taxi driver, yes.
And of course, his great service to the hospital.
Oh, yes, yes, he brought us many patients. There were very few cars, and very few people had cars in those. I don't think there were more than maybe a couple of dozen cars in the whole area around here. And so the taxi was very busy. People walked much more than they do now. They walked for miles. The standard way to get anywhere was to walk there.
It's really interesting because one person was telling us how they used to sleigh ride, the children would sleigh ride, and of course they were using the old road to Hazleton. So I said, they must have, you know, really used that big hill. And we got asked, what about traffic? Oh, well, that was no problem, only about two cars a day.
Yeah, not much traffic.
So it was quite safe. And, of course, Manson Creek and all that, that was all finished long before that.
Yeah.
And you mentioned also regarding there was a little part about the nurse's residence, that there was a south part.
If you look at the nurse's residence today, you can see that the south part of it is older looking than the rest of it, and that was the residence, that old part was the only residence in 1939.
And that's where Mr. Bennett and Grady Scott live right now.
That's where they live now, yeah.
And then the new part was built in 1945.
I think somewhere in the 1940s that the new part of the residence was
And then, of course, as you had already mentioned, Dr. Wrench had retired in 1936.
Yes.
That was, so Dr. Austin sort of took his place at that time.
Dr. Austin didn't get here until a couple of years later.
Oh, I see.
I think Dr. Leonard Rich.
Oh, yes.
Son of the old doctor filled in those 2 years.
And he didn't stay retired very long. He left this world in 1939.
39, I think. I think it was when we were here that we got word
of
that he had died. Yes.
And then you went on to say that transportation to places like Kitpingan and all kinds of places along the way,
there was no road from Hazelden to Rupert in those days, other than the railroad. You could drive as far as Kitsigukla along the route of the present highway, more or less, but it was just a dirt road with grass growing up between the two ruts. When you got to Kitsigukla, that was the end of the road. You couldn't drive in. If you wanted to go to Kitwanga, you had to go by train. Is what we used to do from the times.
So that actually speaking, Kitwanga, of course, Kitwanga village would have been there long ago.
Oh yes, that would be there.
And then the Indians, they would go by trails and everything.
Yes.
And they would, they would have to cross the Skeena too, wouldn't they?
Well, they would have their dugout canoes.
Oh, yes. That's terrific. It really is. And we went on to say that, of course, you told that beautiful story about one of your unusual things that happened at the hospital when I believe it was you that was called to a maternity case.
Oh, yes, yes. We brought the woman to the hospital here on one of the speeders that travel along the railroad tracks. And when she got here, she was delivered to have twins, to two little baby girls.
Oh, that's funny. Are these people still in this area, or they moved on?
I think they've moved away from this area, but not very far away.
Well, I suppose it doesn't matter. You'd rather not stay.
Oh, we better not put names.
That's fine. And were there any other incidents out there, you know, worthy of interest to mention regarding your practice here? Of course, you've seen a lot of growth. That would be the most important thing.
Oh, yes, many changes. We, the Indian people have progressed remarkably in the meantime, between since 1939. Relations between the races have improved greatly. The races mix in a social way much better.
It really is fantastic, isn't it? How humanity just sort of just blends after a while.
Yes, it takes time, but then it happens. The co-education of the Indian children and the white children has done much to accomplish this.
It really is, and I think the knowledge of the Indian people of the white, and shall we say the knowledge of the white of the Indian.
Vice versa, yes. Mutual understanding leads to mutual respect and regard, yeah.
That's terrific. I suppose you've had calls and personal calls to all the villages and then inside them in all kinds of circumstances.
Oh yes, indeed. Some of the circumstances happy and some very sad ones, yes. We've had seen our share of tragedy and heartache and disappointment, death.
Yes, it's always one with the other, isn't it?
Yes.
I suppose, of course, your word to the wise, of course, your warnings or your outlook towards toward the future here, of course, is naturally caution to the children to watch the usual accidents that occur with children, you know.
Yes.
Just one more question. I think we're doing fine. Did you have, or have you during your practice in the last later years, or at least I suppose you would have brushed with people being involved in this, oh, this sad thing of drugs, and would you say that it's been noticeable, or it's been on the decline, or on the increase, or is it?
If in drugs you include alcohol, it is a very, very sad thing. We do have some of the other drugs, but there's a lot of talk about other drugs, marijuana, heroin, so on. But the worst drug and the biggest problem by far is alcohol, and it is a drug. And it is the cause of many times as much heartache as these other drugs. And they are sad things too, the other drugs. But the real heartbreaker is the way alcohol is used and abused all the time, every week.
Dr. Whiting, you mentioned that the statistics say certain things about alcohol.
Yes. First of all, the people that are concerned about alcohol and health make the alarming statement that alcohol is killer number three. That in one way or another, alcohol is the third commonest cause of death in our society. Heart disease is the commonest, cancer is the next commonest, and alcohol-related diseases, violence, highway death, and so on, is the third commonest cause of death. In British Columbia, according to government statistics, which we would expect to be fairly conservative, because the government likes to think it makes money out of the sale of alcohol. But according to government statistics published just 3 or 4 years ago, there are 70,000 alcoholics in British Columbia.
Yeah, chronic alcoholics.
Yes, chronic alcoholics.
But compared to, you mentioned, you know, where they even chronic heroin users.
Yeah. Well, the same set of statistics said that there were probably 12,000 to 14,000 heroin addicts in British Columbia, as compared to 70,000 alcoholics.
What do you think is the cause of? Do you think that it's man trying to escape from problems or making excuses for himself? Or what do you think? Personal opinion.
Oh, personal opinion, I guess that man is a sinner. and this works itself out in so many ways. The profit motive has done so much to promote the sale of alcohol, and still is. Time magazine has the most beautiful colored ad in Time magazine, invariably they present the drinking custom as a glamorous thing, very attractive to young people. Of course, they never show any of the heartache that goes along with the custom.
I noticed that television practically, you know, any of these little plays, movies, have just so much, you know, they'll be, you know.
It's the things to do, and everybody jokes about the drunk. The drunk is the saddest thing you see in our society, and you see it often. It's not something to laugh at, but everybody laughs at it.
Yes, it's interesting to note that tobacco ad and smoking in general is considered under the control of that, isn't it?
A little bit. And tobacco is a killer too, and I'm glad that they do put the warning in the ad that it's harmful to health, and it is harmful to health. But no such warning in the liquor ad that it's killer number three.
So anyway, I understand that the little party that the community had for you, they had an interesting gift for you.
Oh, indeed they did. They had several gifts. But,
I was thinking of the big book.
Oh, the big book. Yes, some folks got together and collected pictures of hundreds of babies that I had delivered, only I haven't delivered them. I stand by and let the mother deliver the baby.
I guess so.
I believe in the mother having the baby, not the doctor having the baby. But anyway, we've got this book was presented to me, and it's just a lovely gift. And it's got pictures of several hundred babies that were born in the hospital here and in the hospital at Salakula while I was
there. Oh, you were there too?
Yes, for 14 years between 1940 and 1955.
Oh.
I was with Salakula.
Oh, so you're both working both places?
No, I was away from Hazelton for those 14 years and then returned in 1955.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't know that.
Oh.
Oh, that would be interesting. My goodness, did you didn't have a total, but did you have a total of the babies?
No, I don't know. I don't know how many are in the book, and I don't think they've got them all in the book, but they've done a wonderful job of trying to get a great many pictures, you know.
That's wonderful. I wondered if they maybe submitted names of those that they couldn't find pictures of.
There is a long list of the names of the Balasula babies in the book, and I think there are more people on the list than have pictures.
Oh, yes. And so I understand you're going to retire into the beautiful Okanagan Valley.
Yeah, that's our plan.
And just grow beautiful apples?
We have a small fruit farm. Less than 2 acres in size, and that doesn't sound very big, but it has 160 fruit trees on, and that does sound big.
Oh my goodness, you're going to be busy.
Yeah.
Oh my, but I guess every variety.
Yes, we have apples, pears, peaches, plums, and apricots, cherries.
Oh, we'll have to get your address. That is beautiful. That is a beautiful place to retire to. Well, I thank you very kindly, Dr. Whiting. I think this has been just tremendously enjoyable.
Well, it's been a pleasure for me and an honor for you to ask me to speak to the children's school. I enjoyed it very much, and they're such great children, and they weren't backward about asking questions and making remarks. It was a very enjoyable morning.
Well, of course, a lot of them you probably brought into the world.
Yes, so.
And possibly been in and out to see you at different times.
Oh, yeah.
So that's just wonderful. Thank you very much, Dr. Whiting.